Hi, this is Rabbi Jim Hebel. Thank you so much for turning your browser this way or listening, however you do, to this podcast. So, some new things this week. I now have a Skype phone number and a Skype line. You can Skype me at Rav Jim, or you can call my voicemail line at 610-624-3441. That's in the United States. And you can leave me a message, and if you ask a question, I'll actually try my best to answer it. Please know, though, that if you call in, I'm just going to assume that you're giving me permission to use your voice and your words to be able to actually share with the wider community out there who's listening your questions and concerns. Again, I thank you so much for tuning in this week, and we'll get to a sermon about the political process that's going forward right now, and not who to vote for, since that would be a violation of certain rules, but specifically, what do we need to be listening for when our candidates give us ideas, our candidates present themselves to us? What's a way of going forward, and who wants to go back to the future? Well, we'll get to all that in just a few minutes. Again, thank you for turning your browser this way. Shalom. Shabbat Shalom. Our Torah portion this week involves the notion of Terumah. Terumah is the name of our portion this week and is described as a gift that is bestowed in a special manner. While most would think that God would demand gifts, the Torah describes the way a gift to God is to originate and be presented. God asks for gifts to be given according to that which moves the heart of the individual. It appears that as opposed to God demanding, there is something special, unique, about a gift given freely. This is the special notion of the relationship between God and the Israelites, where that which is given is not demanded, but offered, not coerced, but handed to their Creator. As we entered into this past week, we arrived at things that were taken for granted, given, and perhaps offered, and perhaps maybe too offered, but we'll get there in a minute. We began the week with a shock as the presumed favorite fell. A week that began as a wonder as to how much damage would be done ended with the presumed winner shocked and the upstart gleeful. I am, of course, speaking of the Super Bowl. I have to tell you that it was truly one of the most difficult contests to watch because every play made me wonder who to root for and who to root against. Then there was the issue of being unable to just choose those colors. I mean, needless to say that red, white, and blue, and red, gray, and blue just don't offer you a lot of distinctive possibilities. Then came the next great contest. But first, a word of clarification for everyone involved. As many of you know, there are certain things that cannot be done in terms of congregations with 501c3 status in our country. Since Beth David is one of those organizations, I thought it would be prudent to share with you some of that language and the intent of the rest of this sermon. First, the language, according to the Union for Reform Judaism. They begin with a quote from Pirkei Avot. Labor, love labor, hate the abuse of power, and don't try to become a familiar friend of government. They continue on with the statements with regards to this particular tax status. At the risk of losing their tax exemption, all Section 501c3 organizations, including synagogues, are strictly prohibited from supporting or opposing candidates for office and intervening or participating in political campaigns. Section 501c3 of the code specifically denies tax-exempt status to organizations that directly or indirectly support or oppose candidates for public office at any level. This is an absolute ban. However, there are some activities, such as involvement in nonpartisan voter registration, education, and, quote, get out the vote, unquote, campaigns, that will not in any way jeopardize a Temple's 501c3 tax-exempt status. In an effort to provide additional guidance to charities regarding acceptable and prohibited political activities, the IRS has unveiled a new reinforcement program entitled the Political Activity Compliance Initiative. So from this point forward, I am not looking to endorse any one candidate or political party, but I am asking us for us to think about the vision behind those who seek to lead us. Last Tuesday was somewhat interesting. Needless to say that the issue of the nomination for the various parties was less than clear. But one thing really began to make me wonder, and it ties back to our Torah portion. The question of, quote, which reason causes people to vote? Why should one surrender or give his truma, his or her vote, was something that bordered on palpable. It seemed that some of the candidates were asking us to cast our ballots based on one idea, and others wanted our votes because of something radically different. In one of the campaign camps, we found a speech that could basically be summarized as the "they haven't" speech. And what happened is that the candidate proceeded to go along and give a series of statements about all the things that we expected our government to do, and the audience was chanting "they haven't" or "and they haven't" the entire time. When I heard this speech, I really didn't like it. Not because of the comment or issues, but because of the issue for me, which was the tone and the reason of the speech. The ascendancy to the presidency of our country needs to be something where we have desire and not despair, aspiration and not armor. Returning to our Torah portion, I wondered about the gift or the vote to be given to this particular candidate. If the Torah portion is about giving a gift freely, then we need to consider why a candidate asks for that gift. Is our vote to be given because we fear and because we need to be coerced by our panic? Ours is a country based on the attempt to hope beyond hope, that in being Americans, we become better and we create a better world for our children and ourselves. Suggesting that because we can point out what is wrong in our country, we gain the right to lead, is a bizarre notion. If not, dare I say, possibly un-American. Our country was not built to be a great nation based on what we could find wrong, but what we could find right and make right in our country and in our world. Contrast this with the speech that basically had the tagline of, yes, we can change, yes, we can. I want to talk about the vision any candidate or leader attempts to bring to our lives. In considering a candidate, I would suggest that there are three ideas to consider. The first is that of, where does the candidate cast their vision? Where do they look? When I heard this speech, which I considered the "they haven't" speech, I wondered, isn't this an indictment of all American politics and policy and possibly even political structure for the last, let's say, 100 years? Regardless of party, it might be possible to make the "they haven't" case against almost every administration. If this candidacy had continued, then I know that I would have been wondering if this administration would have been condemned by these words at the end of their first or second term. If you were looking for a text to consider the vision of any leader, I would suggest Psalm 126. When Adonai restored the fortunes of Zion, we were like those who dream. Then our mouths were filled with laughter and our tongue with shouts of joy. Then it was said among the nations, Adonai has done great things for them. Adonai has done great things for us, and we rejoiced. Restore our fortunes, Adonai, like the watercourses in the Negev. May those who sow in tears reap with shouts of joy. Those who go out weeping, bearing seed for planting, shall come home with shouts of joy, carrying their harvest. Returning to the idea of vision and hope, seeing rivers in the Negev would be a hope, if not a miracle. But then again, we are a nation where hope and miracle have been more of our history than negative stands. Ask yourself, who in their vision casts a plan that looks to amazing possibilities? For I think that candidate has the potential to get us there. The politics of attack only tell us why we shouldn't do something. I look to this psalm and ask, who gives us the best possibility to dream? The second idea I look to is that of the prophet Isaiah when he describes a leader. In the 32nd chapter of the book of Isaiah, there it is a description of the righteous leader versus the leader lacking righteousness. When I think of the president of our country, or any leader, this is a standard that we might want to consider. Behold, a king shall reign in righteousness, and ministers shall govern with justice. Every one of them shall be like a refuge from gales, a shelter from rainstorms, like brooks of water in a desert, like the shade of a massive rock in a languishing land. Then the eyes of those who have sight shall not be sealed, and the ears of those who have hearing shall listen, and the minds of the thoughtless shall attend and note, and the tongues of the mumblers shall speak with fluent eloquence. No more shall a villain be called noble, nor shall gentleman be said of a knave. For the villain speaks villainy and plots treachery, to act impiously and to preach disloyalty against Adonai, to leave the hungry unsatisfied and deprive the thirsty of drink. As for the knave, his tools are knavish. He forges plots to destroy the poor with falsehoods, and the needy when they plead their cause. But the noble has noble intentions and is constant in noble acts. We are looking for noble actors, righteous leaders who act righteously for those who cannot have a decent life without a great leader. And we are looking for a president or members of Congress who provide the shelters from life's storms. Finally, I apologize for this seemingly daunting task, but I would just suggest the entire book of Amos. This is a book from the minor prophets, and when I say minor, you should know that that is code language for short in Bible speak. If you want to see biblical satire of a ruling class, it's there. If you want to see someone accused of being the establishment prophet, it's there. If you want to see what God calls those who are truly godly to view, to be accountable for, it's there. The bottom line is this. We are in the process of picking some of the most important leaders who will take us into the future. We all have different ideas about what makes our country great, and as Jews, we have lessons from biblical as well as rabbinic literature that inform us of what is right and wrong. In fact, in Mechilta de Rabbi Ishmael, we are implored to learn civics as a mitzvah so that we might be good citizens. The bottom line is this, learn your candidates. If you're trying to figure out which of them is best or which one claims moral imperative, look to our moral basis, starting with these three passages. Personally, I'm looking not for the candidate who can tell me I must vote for them to survive, but rather, I'm looking for the candidate who casts a future vision and invites my decision to a better tomorrow, where my vote is given freely, teruma, to the best that our dreams have to offer. Shabbat Shalom.